Karen, State Farm Insurance, and this is Phil Nee, hoping all your trails are happy. Happy trails, my friends. We'll talk again next hour with some community conversation on The Morning Show. It's 71 degrees at WRCO-FM in Richland Center. The 9 o'clock update is sponsored by Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service, continuing the long tradition of caring service to area families, and the Phoenix Center, family fun at its best. There's always something for everyone, including bowling, legendary pizza, and video games.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Democrats continuing to debate the future of their presidential ticket and whether President Biden should stay atop it. Last night, the president held a critical solo news conference that eased questions for some but raised more concerns for others.
Biden mixing up his own vice president and his rival.
Look, I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president. But I think she was not qualified to be president.
Trump seizing on that moment, writing, "Great job, Joe." But Biden firing back, "Yes, I know the difference. One's a prosecutor and the other's a felon."
ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Mary Bruce. A new cancer report finds nearly half of all cases and related deaths are linked with lifestyle choices, things like smoking, physical inactivity, and alcohol use. AT&T Wireless is a third-party cloud platform, was targeted by hackers in April. Records on customer phone calls and text messages taken, but the company says the information of them was not compromised. This is ABC News. When testimony resumes today at the manslaughter trial of actor Alec Baldwin, a key witness is expected on the stand. Hannah Gutierrez, the armorer on the movie Rust, Baldwin is charged in connection with a deadly accident on the set where the cinematographer was shot by a gun that Baldwin was holding. The father of three, lucky to be alive in Chicago after he tried to save a stranger.
Rideshare driver Paul Bissett says he was waiting for a passenger in Chicago when he saw a man getting robbed. Surveillance video shows the victim trying to run away when Bissett decides to help.
So I just pulled my car towards them and honked my horn really loudly, thinking that would help and get them to stop doing what they were doing. And one of them just shot me right through the window of my car.
The father of three was shot in the chest, but was able to drive away and call 911.
That's ABC's Derek Dennis. Several cities in northern Mexico dealing with something new, a crocodile invasion. Hundreds swept in by recent storms. Sherry Preston, ABC News.
The old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same, sure applies to the Phoenix Center. The bowling alley has been the go-to for good times and great food for generations in Richland County. It's where good friends become better friends and good times become awesome memories. From a delicious pizza to bowling to a conversation over your favorite drink, the Phoenix Center in Richland Center is the right choice every time. The Phoenix Center. Call 649-7469.
This is Mark Jelinek of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. Like you, we are working our way through the current trying times, making decisions that are best one day at a time. Our priority is, as it has always been, to care for you and your family and pay close attention to all your needs and concerns while doing all we can to keep you safe. Your questions are always welcomed at the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
Hi, this is Daniel Miller. O'Cooch Books and Libations, downtown Richland Center. Ever wonder what O'Cooch comes from? It comes from the O'Cooch Mountains, and we think it was put in there by Meriwether Lewis back in the 1833 Northwest Territories map. O'Cooch Mountains, right up there where Mount Tabor is in Richland County. You can go and check it out for yourself. But O'Cooch Books and Libations, named for the Native American tribe that was in the area back in the day when my family came here. O'Cooch Books and Libations, downtown Richland Center.
Highs in the mid-80s today. South to southeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear, patchy fog and a low of 62. Saturday, partly cloudy, rather warm and muggy. Isolated showers or thunderstorms possible. A high of 87. Sunday, 92, partly sunny, hot and humid, and a slight chance of a thunderstorm during the day.
The markets were steady at this past Wednesday sale at the Mathis Farms Auction Market in Biola. Holstein bull calves sold up to $650, with heifer calves up to $320. The bulk of the slaughter cows sold from 90 to 136, with questionable health or thin, lightweight cows 30 to 80. A 1,700-pound grass steer stole at $1.40. Our next feeder sale will be on Friday, July 19th. We're already receiving consignments now for that sale. If you have feeder cattle you wish to sell, give Darren, Colton, or Jim a call so we can get them listed on our sales list. And we sure appreciate the extra time to get our maintenance work completed at the sale barn. Whitewashing is left to do this Saturday, and they'll be ready for all of the upcoming sales. Mathis Farms Auction Market in Biola has served the farmers of our area for over 60 years. And don't forget to take the family out for ice cream.
At Julie Karen State Farm, we're passionate about helping neighbors at all stages of life. The new driver, the new parent, the home buyer, the cycle riders, to the captains of boats. From your first job to the retiring couple ready to enjoy their golden years, important milestones and life's unexpected events, we choose to care for the people with the need, not just the risks and needs. Our goal is to take the confusion out of finding the right coverage. Stop by our office in Richland Center. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Today's specials are Country and Community from the WRCO studios, sponsored by Richland Family Restaurant.
On our morning show today from WRCO, we have a new topic. In fact, Savannah Ducharme is back with us, treatment court coordinator, and she is here with Richland County's first ever adult court graduate and adult drug court graduate. So, and that is Rachel Bowe. So Savannah and Rachel are here today. We're going to find out the story and find out what it is all about. But welcome back to the morning show studio, Savannah.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Good to have you in here. So tell us a little bit about adult drug courts.
So Richland County Treatment Court as a whole, a hybrid program for both alcohol and drugs, came together in 2022. The sobriety court portion of it started back in 2017. But with Rachel here, she's our first drug court graduate that we've had since we started the program in 2022. So I wanted to really highlight kind of all the big things that she's accomplished over the course of her being in the program and the fact that it was and is the first graduate that we've had.
Yeah. How proud are you of her?
I'm very proud. It's not an easy program. I got to say that, especially for, anybody entering it. There's a lot that you have to do, a lot we ask of you, but it's all to kind of better yourself, better your outcome, better your life.
So tell me how the process works for that, how you are in the, basically in the class, right?
So you are referred essentially to the program as a kind of almost a court sentencing. It's an alternative to prison for individuals. So you're referred. We go through kind of a checklist of criteria that you have to meet, a risk and need, an AODA, a diagnosis, whether or not you live in the county, your age, kind of your history as a whole. And then from there, it's in the court's hands as to whether or not you get sentenced to treatment court. And then you start.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing when that happens, sometimes you're pulling for somebody so you want so badly for them to do well, don't you?
Oh, yes. It has its challenges. It has its good days, bad days, ups, downs, everything in between. But it's good to see somebody like Rachel at the very end of it kind of really turn her life around and do well and accomplish all these things that I don't think she probably could have without the program.
Well, we bring Rachel into the conversation. Good morning, Rachel.
Morning.
Good to have you on with us here today. So was some of it maybe somebody pulling for you? Was that part of the motivation there too?
Absolutely. The whole team, I have a few friends and family, and also my three children.
So you had a lot to recover from, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your history. Did you grow up in the area?
I did. I was born in Richland Center. I went to Ithaca High School. I had a baby my sophomore year. I got my HSED in 2019. I moved away for quite a while. My first job was Applebee's in Wisconsin Dells for 7.5 years. And then I moved back here and got in a bunch of trouble.
So trouble kind of
followed you, or how did it work? You know?
Well, I can't really blame it on anybody but myself. But I met a guy. We were together for 5 years, and that was my 5 years of my addiction. When we broke up, I was still in a bunch of trouble, you know, and I got sentenced, but I wanted to quit, and I wanted to do better and, you know, get my kids back and finally get on my feet and, you know, back to a job. I went 2 years without a job, and I did accomplish those things. I have my own place, I have a job, I have a vehicle, I have my children back, and life is definitely looking up.
How good does that feel?
It feels great, except for the few extra pounds that I put on.
Well, if that's the worst that comes from it, right? So, so you were in this relationship. So in that sense, you're kind of an enabler and being enabled. And, you know, how did that work?
Well, he was from Louisiana. He had the addiction when he moved up here. And... well, he kind of enabled me to do the addiction. I didn't really know how to do, go about doing the drug. He did it lit it for me for the first 2 years of my addiction. And, we fought all the time. It was an abusive relationship, not a good situation for my kids. I finally got out of that. And then I got sentenced, and then I got sober.
What was your drug of choice during that time?
Methamphetamine.
Okay. A lot of people have a hard time recovering from that, don't they?
A lot of people do, but a lot of people don't have the support that I had in the treatment court program. There's a lot of support. And even when you do screw up, you know, how do I want to put that? They still support you, and, you know, you have, you know, little sanctions and stuff like that. And, you know, it's not easy in the beginning. It's a lot of things that you have to do. You know, you have to meet with your drug court coordinator once a week, your probation officer once a week. I had to do 7 weeks of IOP, which is intensive outpatient treatment therapy, and that was 3 days a week, 3 hours a week. And I did complete that, never missed a session. But it changes you internally when you actually do the work and you go through the program, and it's just it's a good outcome. It is a lot of hard work, but it's definitely worth it.
That's such an addictive drug. I just can't imagine what you went through just day by day, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically all you think about is, you know, where you're going to get it next, how you're going to get it, when it's coming. It's a really horrible drug. It messes with a lot of people's minds. I have some, ex-friends that, you know, completely went nuts. and I don't know that they'll ever recover from that. But yeah, it's very, very addictive. And I mean, you lose all, you know, emotions, and, you know, you're just kind of like a numb zombie that just wants more of it.
That's the thing that, you know, for friends and family, they know Rachel is in there somewhere, but it wasn't necessarily Rachel reacting and acting like they figure Rachel should, right?
Yeah, I was not a very nice person. I was angry all the time. And, you know, I tried to hide my addiction, and everybody knew. But my kids, my mom, a few friends, you know, they never gave up on me, which was a big part of my recovery as well, because without that, you know, support system in your family and friends, it's really hard to do on your own.
Well, definitely. And then you had your kids. You had a lot to really try to recover for, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of call it a functioning addict. I ran the press box for a year and a half while I was addicted to meth. I mean, I did pay my bills and things, but things between me and the ex got worse, and I lost the apartment, and the kids went to live with their dad and grandma for about, it was a little over a year. I never actually lost placement or custody of them. I let them go there because of the situation that I was in, which turned out not to be a very good situation for them.
No.
They got taken back in January from their dad and grandma due to their father doing meth and heroin in the home and not feeding them. And I've been trying to get them through, you know, therapy and counseling, and, you know, because that was what I put them through, plus what their dad put them through, was a lot of trauma in their life.
How are your children doing now?
Well, they're doing all right. They passed all their classes, which I was actually kind of surprised about, because my son didn't go to, he's in sixth grade, he didn't go to school till January of this year, and he did pass all of his classes. He's in summer school, and I think they'll do just fine next year in school, which is really good.
Yeah, awesome. And they have their mom there now, you know, a strong parental person in their lives. So
yes, they do. Mm-hmm. I'm very proud to say that I'm still there for my children.
Yeah, I can't fathom what you went through in terms of you were working, but you had this strong addiction. How did you manage to function and work and still get things done like you did?
I just tried to, you know, prioritize even through my addiction, you know, working and the kids. At one point, I had three kids in three different schools when we went to COVID, and that was a challenge in itself. I didn't know anything about the, you know, the Chromebooks or the iPads that they had. But we made it through. I guess, I mean, I don't really know. 'Cause, you know, I never did it around my children or in the same house as my children. You know, I didn't get busted with drugs around my kids. So, I mean, I guess in that sense, my kids were still a higher priority, at least when they were around.
Mm-hmm. Is that the type of drug that you're pretty much addicted to when you the first time you try it?
Pretty much. I mean, I tried it first in 2017, and it started as like a weekend fun thing. And then when we moved to Richland Center, it became an everyday thing. And then it became something I had to have to be able to function. And when you come down off of meth, some people have different, you know, symptoms, but mine was, I had to sleep, you know, because it just, you know, when you're up 2, 3, 4, 5 days at a time, your body, when you don't have that to function, it just shuts down. And you have to sleep. And, you know, at first, in the beginning of my addiction, I could, you know, it makes you not eat. I got past that and learned how to eat on it. Which is basically just forcing yourself to eat, which isn't enjoyable.
Yeah.
But when it comes an everyday thing and that's all you think about and that's all you want to do, you know, you get to the point where you're almost ashamed that you're doing it, especially when you know you want to quit. But it's not easy.
I think that goes along with any addiction, whether it's drugs or alcohol, is the shame that people are trying to overcome sometimes, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm really backwards in this, but how easy would it be to go out and get meth right now if I wanted to? Is it pretty easy?
Fairly easy.
Isn't that something?
It is.
Yeah, scary.
Well, when I first became sober, I unfriended or blocked 250 people on my Facebook. I mean, that's the start of it. You have to take yourself out of that situation and away from those kinds of people, or you're never going to get sober, because you're just going to be around that circle of people that, you know, they don't care whether you're sober or not. They're like, oh, you sure you don't want some? No, I had to. The last time I got out of jail, I was basically, all my stuff was at a trap house, is what I call it, because it's just a place where everybody was doing drugs. And I packed all my stuff and I left there. And that's where life started to get better.
That was kind of the turning point then?
Yeah, I spent I spent my dad's death anniversary and Christmas in jail back in 2022. And in jail, I read the book. It was Codependency No More, but it also talked about, you know, how drugs and alcohol affect you and the people around you. And when my daughter came to visit me on Christmas in jail, it hit me really, really hard. And when I got out of jail the last time, I was 17 days sober, and I did stay sober for 49 days. And then I relapsed, but then I got sentenced. It was April 20th of 23 to the treatment program. And my last relapse was April 26th of 2023.
Okay. So it's been over a year.
Yeah, it's been a year and 2.5 months as of today.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm guessing each day, though, you just got to keep fighting every day, don't you?
Yes. Yes, you do. You just have to think about all the things that you did accomplish and all the things that you could lose. My children need me more than anything in the world, and that is my biggest motivation.
Yeah. This is amazing talk here. We appreciate you coming in and being so honest with us, Rachel. And Savannah, this is a proud moment again for you, isn't it?
It is. It's huge. I thoroughly enjoy being able to watch people accomplish all these things that they thought they never could have. It's terrific to look back on and reflect on and then, you know, skip forward to where we are today. And like we've talked about, the Rachel then and the Rachel now are just two drastically different people. So it's incredible, truly.
A lot of times people aren't quite this fortunate. I mean, it's either go to this treatment court or go to prison. A lot of times it's the latter, isn't it?
Correct. Yep. I mean, there's some people who I think starting off kind of take what the program has to offer perhaps for granted. But once they grasp, you know, we are here for you, we push you, but that's just to better you as a person. And then once they kind of internalize all of that and see that that's what we're here for, then they kind of really begin to turn themselves around and better themselves and maintain sobriety and ultimately live a better life.
Do you currently have other individuals that are going through the program?
Yep. So we have 13 total participants. I have 8 individuals that are in drug court, and I have 5 that are in the alcohol court portion of things.
Is this rewarding work for you?
Rewarding, yes. At the end of the day, I am truly blessed to see so many people accomplish and do such great things.
And Rachel's actually going to have a graduation, right?
She is, yes. In the middle of August, she will be Richland County's first ever drug court graduate since the program started in 2022.
Cap and gown, right?
I might get one.
Maybe. Yeah, I think you deserve. You can wear whatever you want to wear. How does that make you feel when you hear that, Rachel?
It feels really good. I'm actually going to be doing a vision board. It'd be the first person, I think, ever in Richland County to do a vision board. Other counties kind of do it. It's kind of like you do your losses on one side, your journey in the middle, and, you know, where you want to be, your successes and things at the end. So I think that'll be kind of neat to show, you know, all the participants what I actually, you know, went through. I mean, we go through group and things like that. And they kind of know me, but, you know, they don't know the whole story and things. And like Savannah said, you know, sometimes it's, you know, either this or prison. I was facing 18 months in prison, actually. I had 10 open cases and, I don't know, over 60 charges. And, you know, most of them due to, you know, being busted with, you know, methamphetamine or the tools to use it. And I'm really glad that I chose to do this program instead of, you know, sit in prison and lose my kids and everything. It was something better to look forward to.
18 months, losing all those months of your life, too, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, at least I'm not locked up in a jail cell or prison cell, you know, and I'm out in public and still trying to, you know, better myself and better my kids' lives.
But you really had to change friends. I mean, you had a lot of people over the years, I guess so-called friends, we should say, but you pretty much had to turn your back on a lot of people, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be. I literally have, I can count on one hand how many actual friends that I still have, you know, and sober friends at that. I'm trying to make new sober friends. I've actually come across a few of them in my line of work, because I work at Honkers and Sportsman's in Muscadet, and they, you know, the new waitresses and cooks and things, I've come to, you know, bond with them, and, you know, it's kind of like a family there.
You can really relate to somebody that might be struggling, though, can't you?
Yes. Actually, I signed up for a peer support training for all the counties in Wisconsin. They give 50 applications and they select 25 of them. It wouldn't be until I think the beginning of September. I'm still waiting to hear back whether I got in for the training, because that is something that I would like to do, is to help people, you know, going through this, you know, the same thing that I went through, or close to the same thing that I went through, and to help people like that, because it was hard for me, and, you know, I went through it, so it would be easy for me to, you know, point people in the right direction.
You know, it's hard, though, because, you know, if you're talking to somebody that has an addiction to meth, for instance, you know, they probably are lying through their teeth sometimes when they're talking to you, right?
Yes, honesty is one of the hardest things to overcome after having an addiction. It was hard for me in the beginning, and, you know, I hit a bump in the road here at the end as well, because I wasn't honest about getting the new job at Honkers and Sportsman's, which is why I got to do 8 hours of community service.
Oh, okay.
But that is one of the hardest things in having an addiction to change internally, is to be honest, and to be honest with yourself, and to be honest with other people.
Your family has to be proud of you.
They are. They tell me all the time. We had a 4th of July get together, and, you know, my mom and my uncles and my sisters and stuff, they are very proud of me, because I actually talk to them now. You know, in that kind of addiction, you kind of cut off everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's not good to feel that way, you know, alone. And it's nice to have... It's nice to have conversations with my mom and my sisters and, you know, family other than that, and know that they are proud of me and that they are still there for me.
So you've been able to repair some previous relationships as well there with your family?
Yes. Definitely have mended a lot of family relationships, and, you know, mended things with my children, because they're 10, 12, and 19. So my oldest daughter never gave up on me. You know, she was there through a lot of it, and she also is on the sober path. I'm actually very proud of her. She works at Dunkin' Donuts, and she graduated high school, which we never thought she was going to. But also that's partially because when I went to jail the last time, I signed over power of attorney to Bree Ingman, which left my daughter Haley Bow in Richland County so she could graduate from Richland Center. And she's doing very well. She's even going to school to be a special education teacher.
Oh, good for her.
So I'm very, very proud of her and very thankful that she never gave up on me.
Right. Yeah, that unfortunately, lots of times kids do follow the same path. It's cyclical, so to speak. So that's one of the things you're trying to guard against and kind of, you know, lead them on a different path, right?
Yeah, she was, she was drinking and smoking weed, and she was doing self-harm, but I think she's been sober longer than I have, actually.
Good.
And clean of the self-harm as well.
Okay.
So, very proud of her that way, because I'm sure it wasn't easy living with me through the addiction, so.
Does that sound like you when you were her age then? Were those some of the things that you were going through at that time then?
Yeah, I mean, I started, having sex and smoking cigarettes, smoking weed and drinking alcohol at the age of 13. So, I mean, that wasn't ideal. My dad was in and out of prison. My mom, her and the boyfriend at the time, owned a bar and a business and wasn't really around a lot. And I took care of my younger sisters a lot. But when your parents aren't there, then you can pretty much do whatever you want to do, right? Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't go down the greatest path as a child. But I've worked really hard to better myself in life. I mean, even through my addiction, I've always paid the bills and had a job and taken care of the kids. And I just gonna continue to do that.
You are an inspiration. I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
You bet. We'll be back with more on The Morning Show in a moment. We'll wrap up our conversation with Rachel Bowe and Savannah Ducharme in just a moment.
Family Prescription Center, where your family always comes first.
This is Lynette from the Prescription Center. We want to thank all of our longtime friends who have put their trust in us to manage their family's health. We want to thank our increasing number of new friends who have learned just how special we treat our friends. We do realize you can go anywhere or use mail order. We want you to choose us every day. We know copays are the same for any pharmacy in town. However, we feel we provide a superior value for your dollars. If you find our prices higher, we will match prices for all medications. We check to see if any of your prescriptions have dollar off coupons from the manufacturer. These coupons actually put money back in your pocket. If your current pharmacy does not do this, give us a call. We know your time is valuable. When you call ahead, your prescriptions are ready when you stop. I guarantee you will never wait in our drive-thru. Okay, we do not have a drive-thru. The Family Prescription Center, where you and your family always come first.
Walsh's Ace Hardware now is a full-service small engine shop. That's right. Now you can get all your small engines serviced at Walsh's Ace in Richland Center. Chainsaws, snow blowers, trimmers, garden tillers, lawnmowers, and tractors all serviced with two full-time technicians to give you prompt professional service. Walsh's also has new lawn and garden equipment along with snow blowers for sale. Pickup and delivery service available too. Call today to get your equipment tuned up at Walsh's Ace in Richland Center. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Boarding House Antiques in Richland Center, where you can treasure hunt in 17 rooms of antiques and gifts. There's live music at the Garden Stage every second Friday of the month, June through September. Tammy and Margie invite you to visit Tuesday through Saturday. Check out the historic Boarding House Antiques. Check them out on Facebook and their webpage. They buy antiques. 339 West Seminary Street in Richland Center, next to the depot.
Tired of counting sheep? Hi, this is Travis with Wirtz Floor and Home. Did you know that one-third of your life is spent sleeping? The 7 to 9 hours we should spend catching Z's helps the body heal itself, activate the immune system, and give your heart a break. Want to sleep on a Wisconsin-made high-quality mattress? Stop down to our new sister company, Bed & Linen, located on Highway 14, Spring Green, and let us show you why we wake up so refreshed.
Looking for unique and affordable treasure hunt? The Family Thrift Shop has you covered. Discovered sewing patterns for just 25 cents. Vinyl records for $1. CDs, VHS tapes, DVDs, craft supplies, wedding decorations, books, magazines, and more. Got a recent grad heading off to college? We've got everything you need, except furniture, to furnish that dorm or first apartment. Join us for a 50% off sale on all houseware items from July 10th to July 13th. Shop smart, support your community at the Family Thrift Shop, 120 South Main Street, open Wednesday to Friday, 9 to 5, and Saturdays, 10 to 4. See you there.
All Our guests include Savannah Ducharme, a treatment court coordinator from Richland County Health and Human Services, and Rachel Bowe, who's going to be graduating officially soon from the adult drug court here in Richland County. First ever graduate. Which is really cool. So let's talk a little bit about, again, Savannah, your job and some things that that maybe you'd like to touch on today that people don't know about the services provided in Richland County.
So my position as a whole is strictly just the treatment court portion of things. I guess I'd just like to put out there that there are resources here in Richland Center. Health and Human Services does have an AODA counselor that is taking in and accepting clients for drug and alcohol-related addictions. We have myself that can be some sort of referral source to get you in wherever it is that you need to go. I'm capable of doing those alcohol and drug assessments as well, should you choose the path of recovery and get kind of those steps taken in the right direction. There are several other counselors in the area. It's just a matter of getting that first step and getting you in the office.
So getting in the office is the first step, and then you go from there. So what are some of the levels that you go through?
So I typically, or the other AODA counselor, Kaya, will meet with you. We'll go over kind of your lifelong history of anything ranging from your childhood, your school years, up into your adulthood. At the end of the assessment, then we kind of establish where you are on a level of care, whether that's just regular outpatient, if you're needing something more intense like Rachel did at first, the intensive outpatient, if you're needing partial hospitalization, if you're needing residential. It kind of varies just based on the severity, essentially, of your addiction. And then from there, the rest is ultimately in your court. We can't force anybody to go to treatment. Aside from being the treatment court program, then we can almost walk you there with a leash. But that's kind of the steps of everything in terms of treatment court. That's all just a referral process, whether it's from attorneys, jail staff, district attorney, probation agents, yourself. You can refer yourself to the program. And then it's just the eligibility steps after that.
Because of the volume, lots of times of people, you know, going through this and things like that, I think some of us feel like, well, they just got a slap on the wrist and they're back on the street. I mean, I think you're kind of overworked and overloaded, aren't you?
It can be a lot, definitely right at first. I will say that dealing with individuals addicted to drugs is substantially more challenging than those that are addicted to alcohol. But that's just addiction as a whole. It's not an easy thing to break. It's challenging, but like I've mentioned several times, the reward at the end of it is worth every battle and hair you pull out of your head in the process.
Those that you deal with in alcohol court as well, it's a tough situation because of the culture that we live in, isn't it?
It is, yes. Treatment court takes OWI individuals four and under. Unfortunately, you can't get into alcohol court with an OWI fifth or sixth due to recent kind of law changes. But we take other individuals with other alcohol-related kind of convictions or open cases as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be just driving while under the influence. But it's another very hard thing to break because, you know, drinking alcohol is so socially accepted. It's out there in the open. You can walk in anywhere practically and get your hands on it. Anything and everything in general in terms of addiction is very challenging. It's not an easy cycle to break, but I'm pleased with everyone once they get towards the end of it.
So tell us about the alcohol court then, or sobriety court, I should say. You've got some success stories there too, don't you?
Yes. So the sobriety court portion of things started back in 2017. And 2017 up till now, Richland County has had 28 successful graduates. I don't believe any of them have reoffended since graduating, which is huge. Next week, we'll actually have another alcohol court graduate that will be completing the program, has done very well throughout everything. So we'll turn that 28 into a 29 and more from there.
A lot of great stories there, right?
Definitely, for sure.
So you've worked in other capacities. I understand you were a jailer for a time, too?
Yes. Prior to working at Health and Human Services, I was at the Sheriff Department here in town for almost 5 years, so I've seen a lot of the people I'm actually being their coordinator for now in, you know, all different realms of their personalities and things of that nature, including Rachel. I've met Rachel on the inside, behind bars, quite a few times, but I think ultimately it's kind of helped me deal with the clientele that I have now. It led me towards actually this career path. After the Sheriff Department career, I pursued counseling. So I was actually Rachel's counselor for a short while before I kind of established that that wasn't really my fit as an individual, which landed me into treatment court. And I think that's kind of where I'm almost meant to be. It's the best of both worlds. I can kind of still put in there the whole counselor side of me, as well as the more stricter portion of things. I can not tell people or my participants how it is, essentially, but I can be more straightforward and forthcoming with them, whereas counseling, you can't really go and do that to people. So,
yeah, counseling is tough work, isn't it?
It is. It was nice. I mean, I've helped a couple people accomplish and successfully complete treatment even while I was a coordinator. So I have my success stories outside of treatment court as well, which is great to see.
Rachel, when you're around society, do other things bother you? Do alcohol, people drinking alcohol, do things like that bother you or not?
The alcohol doesn't bother me at all, but that's probably because my mom was an alcoholic, and I don't really drink. I've never been a drinker, but that part of it doesn't bother me at all, the alcohol part. I'm not really around anybody else doing anything else. I try not to put myself in those situations.
Yeah, that's the best way. If you had the time tunnel and you could go back and you could talk to your 12-year-old self or whatever, your 13-year-old self, what advice would you give?
To finish school and not do drugs or alcohol, just to be on a better path, because, I could have went to college and I could have, done a lot of things. I did have a baby my sophomore year, and I made it quite a bit hard to do a lot of things. But I would never take that back for the world. But I would definitely tell myself not to get in so much trouble.
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously, you're the person today because of what you've gone through, and you're obviously a stronger person today as a result, aren't you?
Yes. I mean, if I hadn't been through everything that I've been through in life, I definitely wouldn't be the person I am today.
So possibly someday you might want to be a counselor?
Yeah, it's basically peer support is kind of like a counselor. Mm-hmm. And they are looking for, it's an actual paying job. And they are looking for them in quite a few counties in Wisconsin. But I've learned a lot through therapy in this program, especially in IOP, how to regulate your emotions and how to walk away and things, because I used to be, even before the drugs, was a very angry person, had a very short fuse. But there's steps that you can take to let out emotions in a healthy manner.
Mm-hmm. Well said. So then if someone is hearing this, and, what do you think the first step they should do would be?
Well, the first step is that, you want to have to change your life. And when you want to change your life and you need help, you have to seek that help, which, that is the first step, and that is the hardest step, because you can't do it alone. I've learned that the hard way. You just can't do it alone. It takes the steps. It takes the treatment. In the very beginning, I didn't really want to do this, and it got easier, and I learned that I needed it. I needed the treatment. I needed the help. Most people think, oh, Health and Human Services, they don't help you. Actually, they do. And they've helped me through, through the kids, myself, and I am very grateful that I did choose to get help. Because if I can do it, anybody can. I was at very rock bottom and came a very long way. And I'm very proud of myself.
Were there certain things, when you talked about having relapses, were there certain things that, set you off, or was it random? Or
Basically, it was just being around those people that were still doing drugs. You know, I thought I could handle that. Thought I could handle, oh, I can be in the same room with people smoking meth. Until they hand you the bong, and then you're like, oh, well, let's just hit this. You have to take that out of your life. You have to take those people out of your life. And that sometimes hurts. You know, sometimes you've been friends with those people for 20 years, but you have to stop putting yourself in trigger positions, because you have triggers all the time, every day. One of mine is a torch lighter. I can't use a torch lighter because that's how I used to smoke meth. So I tried to stay away from things like that, you know, in places that I used to do it, or, you know, stuff like that. You just have to stay away from your, how did they put it? You have to feel uncomfortable sometimes to change what feels comfortable. And I learned that in IOP. It's a pretty good one.
Yeah, that is. You could possibly write a book someday.
I thought about it, honestly.
Yeah.
It'd be more like a trilogy.
The different chapters. But is it safe to say that, I mean, there's a chance that you might not still be with us had you not changed your ways, right?
Right. On the path that I was going, you know, I was homeless. I didn't have a job. You know, my kids weren't with me. My vehicle was broken. You know, I was at very rock bottom and realized that this is not what I want in life. It's not what anybody should want in life. And I know that it's really hard to kick any kind of addiction, but you just have to stay positive and you have to keep moving forward.
Again, what can people do? Can they reach out to Richland County Health and Human Services, Savannah? They're hearing this and you can need some help?
You can certainly reach out at any point in time. We will gladly help you and get you pointed in the right direction.
Good. Anything else you'd like to add today?
I don't believe so.
You gotta be proud, though. Your student's doing well, right?
Yes, definitely. I'm very proud. Very proud of Rachel. Very proud of everyone that I have in the program.
Thanks for coming in today, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. And again, Rachel, thanks for your honesty.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, it's been amazing to hear you today. Rachel Bo, who is going to be officially graduating in August from the Adult Drug Court, and Savannah Ducharme, Richland County Health and Human Services Treatment Court Coordinator on today's morning show.
Donald Trump brags he nominated the justices who overturned Roe v. Wade, getting rid of the constitutional right to abortion.
Well, I did something that nobody thought was possible. I got rid of Roe v. Wade. For 54 years, they were trying to get Roe v. Wade terminated, and I did it, and I'm proud to have done it.
Donald Trump not only took away abortion rights, he wants to monitor pregnant women and punish those who seek an abortion. Just listen.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion, yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah.
Banning abortion, monitoring, and punishing women. That's how far Trump might go in a second term. Visit abetterwisconsintogether.org/TrumpMonitor to tell Donald Trump his views on abortion are too extreme for Wisconsin. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
Rockwell Automation in Richland Center is more than just a company. They are a part of this community. The team is made up of coaches, board members, firefighters, and EMS. Rockwell is proud to support and serve neighbors every day, both in and out of the workplace. What they are asking from the community is, if you are a part of a nonprofit organization or 501(c) and have opportunities for Rockwell employees to partake in, please contact them, as they would love to partner with your organization. The team is looking for volunteering and donation opportunities within the surrounding communities. If you would like to partner with Rockwell Automation or have any questions, please call them at 647-9400. They look forward to extending their community involvement. Rockwell Automation, ingrained in the community, dedicated to making a difference.
Do you enjoy working with a locally owned mom-and-pop business? If so, consider Meyer Oil and LP. We've been locally owned since 1956, providing propane, bulk lubes, and fuel. We have you covered. If you're considering a new fuel provider, please call Meyer Oil and LP at 608-524-3914 and see if we're the right fit for you.
Hello, WRCO listeners. This is Kenny, the wannabe baker from Christie's Sunnyside Bakery and Cafe. Hey, the feel of summer is here. Enjoy our outdoor dining and our new summer menu. We have many of your old favorites, along with some new taste of summer. Check us out online or stop on in to Christie's Sunnyside Bakery and Cafe. We are open Tuesday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Saturday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Christie's Sunnyside Bakery and Cafe, where every day is sunny.
Welcome to Pratt Chat. Pratt Chat is a service of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. Join us each week for a conversation with Mark Jelenic of the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service for answers to questions that we're all hesitant to ask. Pratt Chat is sponsored by the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service.
We're back to talk about funerals with Mark Jelenic, and what do we wear to funerals?
Sure. So different people wear different things. So for an individual that's coming to a funeral, we just ask you to show up. So some people are more formal and they like to wear suits or ties. That's kind of going a lot by the wayside. There's a lot of funerals that the only people with a tie or a suit on are the funeral home staff. But for what to wear to funerals, your attendance is usually a lot more important than the actual, you know, what your outfit is. You know, if you just have a polo and a pair of khakis, that's fine. Another thing we run into a lot is we get the question of, when I die, what do I wear? Well, that becomes a lot more of an open-ended thing. Usually think of a lot of people get dressed up for a funeral when they have passed away for their own funeral in what you might consider like wedding attire, something you might wear to a wedding, something a little more formal, because that's usually, it's a formal event, it's a funeral, it's something very special. So a lot of times people might wear a tie, maybe a suit that they haven't worn in a long time, but you don't necessarily have to. You don't have to wear anything as formal as that for the actual funeral. If you're going to, let's say, dress the deceased, you can go with something that is a long sleeve shirt, a short sleeve shirt. We do have to have a pants or a lowers of some kind, either a pair of shorts or pants, something just cover the lower half a little bit. They can have shoes. They don't have to have shoes. They can have socks. They don't have to have socks. It's kind of up to each individual person. The only person that knows if the deceased is wearing shoes and socks are the funeral home and the family members that brought in the clothes. For some people, mom and dad maybe never wore shoes or socks around their house, and they don't want them to have that, or maybe they put them in a pair of fuzzy slippers, or maybe they just leave them barefoot because that's the way that they were, or they've been in a nursing home for a while and in a wheelchair, and they don't have a pair of shoes that fit, or that they have anymore because, well, mom or dad hasn't wore a pair of shoes and had to walk for several years. You don't need to go out and buy anything special for an individual at the time of their funeral. You can. You don't have to. Some people say, this is a formal event for my mom. She was always a very proper lady. We're going to go out and get her a brand new outfit because that's the woman that she was. Other people will just say, we're going to go with something in her closet because these are clothes that she liked to wear, and that's what we're going to put her in. Individuals can have hats on if they want to have hats on. Things like cowboy hats, if you bring in, we can't necessarily put those on for obvious reasons unless you want us to cut the back of the hat because, well, they're round. But just a general baseball hat you can put on a person. Some people, if let's say they've gone through cancer, want to have scarves or something on their head. Other people do not. The funeral home staff will sometimes direct you on potentially, you know, mom or dad, maybe we would recommend they would have long sleeves on, because a lot of times as we age, we get on different medications that maybe lead to a lot of bruising on our arms. You know, usually before you die, your arms get touched a lot. You may be in the hospital, get a lot of IVs and kind of pinpricks in your arms that do kind of darken them up. So sometimes we might recommend to have a long sleeve shirt on, not that they have to, but it just kind of helps to cover up some of that bruising that happens as we age and our skin gets softer and it bruises a lot more easily.
Sometimes you've had, like if somebody wore bibbed overalls, you know, and, you know, whatever, whatever they felt like and whatever means the most to the family.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if somebody wore bib overalls all the time, that's what you know them in. Well, let's not put them in a suit. I'm just going to go with my dad as an example. He's already said he is not having a tie in for his funeral. My dad doesn't own a tie. He doesn't wear ties to weddings. He doesn't wear them anywhere else. He doesn't even own it. He is not going to have a tie on. That is his only request for his funeral, is he is not having a tie on. He's just having a collared shirt and a pair of pants. That's good enough for him. That's what he wants to wear.
Yeah.
Because outside of the three weddings for his sons, I have never seen my dad in a tie in any point in his life. So it would be unnatural for him to wear one.
Likewise, you mentioned people attending a funeral. What about pallbearers? Is that, you know, is that customary for them to wear ties or suits? Or
so it's up to each family. Some families want the pallbearers to all match. Some will say, we've actually had one that all the pallbearers wore bibbed overalls because the deceased wore bib overalls. So they all had matching bibbed overalls. They didn't all have bibbed overalls, so they had to go out and get some. Some people will say they want the pallbearers to all wear the same colored shirt. Maybe it's not the same kind of shirt, but okay, all wear blue or all wear white or something along those lines. Other times it's just show up, you know, wear what's most comfortable for you. You know, try to look nice, try to dress the part. Some people like them to match. Sometimes a lot of times pallbearers are grandchildren, so their parents will kind of direct them on if they would like them to have a particular outfit on of, hey, we want you all to wear this for grandma or grandpa, or we don't really care what you wear, just show up and look nice. And that's usually the direction they go, is just show up, try to look nice, do the best you can with what you have.
Today's Pratt Chat has been sponsored by the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service of Richland Center in Muscadet. For answers to the questions you have, call the Pratt Funeral and Cremation Service at 608-647-4808 or visit prattfuneralservice.com.
This radio commercial was made to convince you to stop speeding. We can't use siren sound effects on the radio, so we'll use other equally jarring sound effects to get your attention. Like telling you that whether you drive a little over the speed limit or a lot, you can crash just the same. You could hurt yourself or worse, others.
I'm at the scene of the collision.
And the damage you cause will be beyond repair. See? We didn't have to use crash or siren sounds after all. Speeding catches up with you. Brought to you by NHTSA.
Singer-songwriter Randy Houser comes to the Sauk County Fair. Tickets on sale now for Randy Houser. Randy Houser, July 13th, SaukCountyFair.com.
Are you ready to buy a house? Do you know somebody looking to buy a house? Do you not know where to start? Do you not know where to apply? Do you just have some general questions about buying a home? Hey, Jason Schultz here with USA Mortgage, the Schultz Mortgage Team, your local mortgage expert. When I say expert, I mean that because mortgage is all I do. I don't want your checking account. I don't want your car loan. I just want to help you buy a house. Whether you need an FHA loan, a VA loan for veterans, a USDA loan, or a conventional loan, contact the Schultz Mortgage Team 7 days a week, 604-5068. We do not work banker hours.
Attention farmers and folks in need of quality supplies. Engine Creek Farm Store has got you covered. Located at 11678 Yuba Drive, Hillsboro, Wisconsin, Engine Creek Farm Store is your local oasis for all things farm and machinery supplies. From essential tools to supplies that keep your farm running smoothly, they've got it all. And guess what? Engine Creek Farm Store goes beyond the farm. You can also pick up some rugged clothes and boots for those hardworking days. Give them a call at 608-528-4001.
Hillsboro Equipment sells outdoor power equipment, services outdoor power equipment, and takes care of the people who depend on their outdoor power equipment. With an 11,000 square foot shop, over $1 million in parts, and multiple trained technicians, Hillsboro Equipment will get you tuned up and ready to go. From the combines in the field to the lawnmower and chainsaw in your yard, they service it all, any make, any model. See the service experts at Hillsboro Equipment or call 489-2275.
The Muscadine Mudcats would like to say thank you for their sponsors this year for Hometown Baseball. These sponsors include Philback Ford, Meister Cheese, Subway of Richland Center, Goplin Insurance of Richland Center, Royal Bank, Honkers and Sportsmen's, Wilkinson Auction Services, Walsh's Ace, Foggy Bottom Woodworks, and the Village of Muscadine. Again, the Mudcats would like to thank the sponsors for the 2024 season.
Hometown Baseball on the radio. Coming up this Sunday, the Arena Aces will host Blanchardville. We'll have the game on WRCO FM 100.9 and WRCO.com. This is Phil Nee inviting you to join us for the Hometown Baseball pregame show at 12:40. First pitch time, 1 o'clock. It's Arena and Blanchardville Sunday from WRCO.